Sorry, I'm going to wait for the drunk people to move away from my window. One sec. Can you actually hear them?
No.
What are they doing? Okay.
They're just, they're not directly outside. I'm on the first floor, but they're just people outside in the street screaming, which is, like, quite funny. Hi, I'm Carl. Welcome to episode 19 of the GRcade podcast. With me are Chris, aka Cuttooth. Say hello, Chris.
Hi there.
Pete, aka Pets. Say hi, Pete.
Hello.
And last but not least, Schenker, aka SuperDragon64.
Hello.
Hi, everyone. So, recently I've been playing a lot of multiplayer games, and a lot of them kind of like purport in some way to be like competitive. And I've had like a lot of really mixed experiences with these games. At their best, I really like them, but at their worst, I get like really angry with them. I'm basically like a big baby, and I get like really mad at video games and really frustrated. And what I wanted to talk to you about to start off this podcast is like, what kind of experiences in multiplayer games do we have that are fun? You know, like, how do you design a game, or what kind of elements of games that you've played have been like your fun, and by contrast, which elements of those games have been kind of frustrating or led to like more frustrating experiences for you? So just like a general question to start off, do we all play like multiplayer games where you're like up against other people? Maybe there's like a ranking system, maybe not, but like you're trying to win against other people.
Yes.
Definitely.
I have, but not recently for a couple of reasons, but I think it's sort of reasons that probably we both share, Carl.
Yeah, I mean, the frustration with that kind of experience can kind of build and build. And I think it's like hard to get that kind of experience right. So what I've been playing recently, I've been playing Overwatch. And I'll start off with Overwatch, because Overwatch has recently introduced a new kind of competitive mode. I don't know if you guys will be familiar with it, but I'll kind of like describe it really briefly. It's called Lucio Ball. And Lucio Ball is a bit like Rocket League. And the games are much shorter, and the aesthetic is much sillier than the kind of air quotes main competitive mode. And I've noticed a lot of like interesting differences between Lucio Ball and kind of main competitive. Just like little things, like people seem to take it less seriously, and that means that people are nicer. There's no one, you know, no one on voice chat like shouting at you. You know, people say things like "nice shot." You know, this is kind of like almost unheard of in the main competitive mode, where people can get like really angry. And I was trying to think about like why this is, and I think part of it is that it's like a build as a sillier game mode, right? Like you go in and like you know, unlike the main Overwatch mode where it's like almost like trying to make Overwatch more serious than it actually is. This is like trying to make Overwatch more silly than it actually is. You have like three Lucios bouncing around a giant football, like you know, trying to like boop it. And I think like that was like an important, you know, kind of part of maybe what guided the community around the game to being nicer. And I was wondering, like, do you guys have like, you know, have you guys had similar experiences to that where like it's the more serious games that have led to you being like more like frustrated?
Yeah, definitely. I remember when Street Fighter V came out last year, and I found myself just rage quitting more often than I care to admit. And there is that seriousness to it. It's like it's you versus one other person. It's ranked. If you don't beat this person, you're going to be playing people who are probably still around your level, but are still beating you. So there's always that feeling that if you don't win and like get a streak going, you're wasting your time. As in, like, you've only got so much time to put into this. So if you're not winning, you're losing. It's not a nice feeling to be sort of spending your time losing at something. And I think that sort of seriousness it comes into effect that I think in a lot of fighting games, but especially Street Fighter V last year for me.
Yeah, definitely, because Street Fighter as well, like, it has very few elements which are, like, overtly silly. There are a lot of, like, moves and, like, characters and stuff which, oh, when you think about them, oh, yeah, that's kind of amusing, you know, fireballs or whatever. But there's nothing there that's, like, kind of, like, supposed to be really, really funny, like, as you play.
Yeah.
Right? You're not supposed to be, like, laughing or giggling at, like, your opponent's moves or at your moves.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, because there's nothing that silly to disarm the idea of getting frustrated with the game. Mm. It's like, say in Rocket League, it's a fundamentally kind of ridiculous game that's fun to play and can get serious, but fundamentally it's about driving a car, playing football, and you can do some ridiculous things in it. So it's much easier for that to be something where you're getting frustrated at this, or I've not played Lucio Ball because I've not really played all that much Overwatch, but it just sounds like that kind of thing where you can't get frustrated at this. What's the point of getting frustrated at this? It's kind of has that ridiculous nature to it.
Another thing when it comes to frustration with multiplayer games and competitive multiplayer games is Chris, they spoke about Street Fighter where it's a one-on-one game, and Carl was talking about Overwatch. I say that playing a game where it's one-on-one versus playing a game with a group of friends is a lot less. In a game where you're playing with friends, you take things a lot less seriously because you're having a laugh. So I don't think the frustration is as bad there as what it would be as if you were playing Overwatch on your own, trying to like boost your rank or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because when we used to play Counter-Strike Source as a group, again, even just against each other, I'd always have fun, even if I was really bad, because well, the main aim was to have fun, and no one was really there to rank up or play seriously. And if you play, like, I agree with Chris there, and I felt the same way when I played Street Fighter last year, especially because it's one-on-one. You just feel that if you're not really improving or ranking up, it's quite disheartening, and it's not really as fun as if you're with other people and just playing for a laugh.
And that's something, like, mentioning Counter-Strike is interesting, because I remember those sessions. I remember, like, a couple of times somebody would get really annoyed at, say, how their team was actually doing. Cough, kill, cough. But it's you know, it's when that happened, everyone would sort of just say, look, you're being ridiculous. This is just sort of us sort of pissing about. Immediately, even when somebody got serious in a situation that was not serious, people would just say, look, there's actually no point at this. Everyone else understands where everyone else is coming from in terms of just having fun in a game with people that you know, or know online at least.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And this is like, I wasn't necessarily expecting the conversation to take this turn, at least immediately, but I agree completely that it's almost like there's like a cultural almost momentum towards either having fun or getting frustrated and taking it too seriously. Like, you can have a game like Counter-Strike which seems to have all of the elements of inducing frustration, but if you're playing it in the right environment where everyone's up for a laugh and not necessarily you pushing themselves to win all the time, you can still have like a lighthearted experience with it that's not going to frustrate you. Or if you get frustrated, you get like you were just saying, you get grounded again. You're very very quickly.
Yeah, it pulls you out of that element, absolutely. Like mentioning Rocket League again, I played it for quite a while at one point whenever it came out on PC, but I think there was a point where, because I never really played that with, say, people off the forum. I only really played it with strangers. And because the chat in Rocket League, you can say, like, oh, nice shot, or close one, or something like that. And generally speaking, most people actually made that a really pleasant experience. Most strangers made that a really pleasant experience for each other. But a few times I got, like, there was, like, team chat of people just being really quite abusive of their teammates and this kind of thing. And that immediately brought me out of it. It's like, wait, I'm just doing this because this is a fun time to spend my free time. Whereas this guy is sort of like, no, I have to be winning every match. And that disconnect really sort of just brought me out of enjoying the experience. I don't think I really went back.
One thing you were saying as well is about games being silly and serious and how it can affect the mood of the game, of the person playing the game. I know it's a different game again, but Mario Kart. Perfect example of a silly game that you get equal amounts of joy and frustration from. I think it's the game that has made me the most angry playing. But yeah, I've had such a good laugh playing with people from G-Arcade at the same time. It's strange how you can get such a wide range of emotion from one game in 16 races, which last an hour.
And the interesting thing about Mario Kart is that there is no real... Well, actually, there is a ranking system, but we just play a tournament each week, and you can get points there, but really, no one's... During the time we play, no one's really looking at the points. It's just each individual race can bring out that range of emotions. You could be really happy and doing well on one lap, and then just swearing blindly in pure... and filled with pure rage on another, just because of how chaotic it can get. So that is, yeah, it's an interesting game, which really puts you through a range of emotions very quickly.
Yeah, but the point I was bringing it up was, is it's a game that's silly that can also make you angry, whereas with Overwatch's Lucio Ball, and it's, as Carl was saying, it doesn't, because it's silly, you just tend not to take it seriously. But with Mario Kart, while it isn't very serious, you can still get frustrated because of, like, a blue shell hits you on the last corner. You know?
That could be just because some elements can be just better designed in some games than others, even if they're both, say, sort of silly or non-serious. So, again, I've not played Lucio Ball, but it sounds like there's less stuff in there that can be frustrating than, say, being first in Mario Kart and knowing there's a blue shell coming at some point, because you know that element is designed into it to the point where if you're first at a certain point, you're probably going to get hit by a blue shell. So you know that sort of unfair feeling is coming at some point, whereas in other games, maybe it's better designed to the point where actually most people aren't going to feel that sense of frustration. So if it's sort of a non-serious game, there's nothing in there to make people really annoyed at playing a non-serious game. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I get what you're saying.
Basically, blue shells suck.
Yeah, I think that... So to drill down into, like, the kind of game design, I guess, philosophy behind Mario Kart, it's all about, it seems to me, at least, all about rubber banding. This idea that, you know, just because, you know, you're a good player and you're in first doesn't necessarily mean that you should be first every match or that you should remain in first, no matter how much you deserve it, because Mario Kart has been designed to give other, perhaps, you know, not so skilled players a chance of, like, achieving victory occasionally via giving them, you know, overpowered weapons that can, you know,
yeah,
your bullet bills that drive for them and push everyone out of the way, or blue shells that seek the person first and things like that. Lightning as well, I mean, you know, gives a huge advantage to that player for essentially no reason and disadvantages literally every other player on the field. So I guess I can see that the frustration there might arise from the design of the game being at odds with your desire to win. And just, you know, I think when you're playing, like, a multiplayer game and you're kind of playing competitively and you want to win, there's, like, a little part of you that's like, yeah, I want to, like, show the people I'm playing with that I'm, like, good at this game. And then there's almost, like, a little, like, sense of, like, you know, there's this little twinge of, like, embarrassment. Like, if you're not doing, like, as well as, like, you think you should be doing. And I think that's, like, maybe what leads to, like, the frustration. I don't know, like I don't play that much Mario Kart, so you know, it's that kind of Is that kind of the thought process? I don't know if that's a bit like philosophical or like introspective, but is that like is that like a something that you identify with?
Yeah, I can understand you saying that. I wouldn't say embarrassment from not doing well, because I feel that everyone who plays Mario Kart with us on Mondays on the Wii U and Tuesdays on the Switch, we're all various ranges of skill. And with Mario Kart, because of the random nature of the game, you can't really feel like that it's your fault for doing quite badly because of that. But I don't know what it is. It's just something about it that it just irks you when you are doing well and then you get screwed over. But at the same time, when you're coming in something like fifth and you get that lucky bullet bill and it puts you to first, it's like ecstasy, you know? Sorry, man, you go.
That's really the balance, and you're right in that if you're doing badly and the luck factor of the items is in your favor, it's a feeling second to none, really. But on the other hand, if you've raced a good race, if you're first and you can see victory, and then you get hit by a blue shell and then a red shell, and then someone nudges you and then someone hits you with a star and you finish eighth, that is frustrating. But it comes in for the most part equal measures, so unless you're really unlucky, you'll have a few bad races, a few great races, and overall, you know, most of the time you'll come back for more. But the good thing is that random factor, as Carl said, it gives less skilled players a chance at winning, and that will encourage them to come back for more. Because what I found with some competitive games is that the more I lose, no matter how much I want to improve, eventually I get to a point where I just feel that I've had enough and I will do something a bit more productive all the time. Whereas with Mario Kart, you still get that victory and that sense of improvement thanks to that random factor, and that's what will keep you coming up for more. We've got a good example with Jawa. He started out finishing every race in 12th place, and this was a couple of years ago when he started on the Wii U version, but on Monday he finished with 200 points. So you can see he's come a long way from that, because he kept playing, and I doubt he'd have played as much if he was coming 12th every single time, and that random factor of items didn't give him a bit of a boost.
Yeah, I can see you saying in a game like Overwatch or PlayerUnknown Battleground or Lawbreakers or any competitive game where it's literally down to skill and only skill. If you're not improving it a great deal, it's going to put you off, and you're going to feel disheartened, and you're going to feel like that what you're doing isn't good enough and there's just no point. You may as well play something else. I can understand a lot of people will consider carrying on playing, but there's a lot of people who are going to be like, well, this is just a waste of my time. I may as well move on to something else. So I can completely understand what you're saying with Mario Kart, where it benefits with the random balancing that you've got with the weapons and the items.
So the way that games like Overwatch and Street Fighter manage making sure that you don't get stomped game after game after game is to have a skill rating or a rank, and to match you against other players at that rank. And that rank is visible to you either as like a title or like a number, you know, a number of points that you have, or like a level. And I think that seeing that rank go up, you know, there's just something about that, you know, seeing that happen, that can make you really happy and really like glad that you played the game. You get like satisfaction because you feel like your time has been like worthwhile because like, you know, that rank has gone up. But if your rank is like staying the same, then I think Cartoof mentioned this when he was talking about Street Fighter, but it feels like your time has been wasted. And if your rank is going down, then that's just depressing, right? That's like a really horrible feeling. It's like necessary if the game thinks that you're getting worse or that you've lost too many times. The game needs to de-rank you so you get, you know, fair matches and you start to win a few a game. But that kind of process, you know, that kind of feels really bad, I think, as a player kind of interacting with that experience.
I agree with that, like, definitely. And I think one of the major factors in the way I put much less time into competitive multiplayer games now is because of things like that kind of ranking. It's because my free time for playing games is, you know, in the past few years, is much less than it was when I was like 17 or 18, when I had so much more free time to put into it. Like, I assume most teenagers these days probably do have all that free time where they can just go, oh, it's fine, you know, I've gone down a level here, I can put another 3 or 4 hours in today and it will, you know, it'll be balanced out, it'll be better than it was. Whereas me, I can maybe put in maybe an hour a day. Well, I can't even do that. I absolutely can't do that, really. But if I'm only playing like a couple of hours a week and those couple of hours are spent sort of going down, it's like it's taking the time away from anything else I could be doing. And that's what feels really frustrating.
And because that process can be so up and down and you know, it is down as often as it is up, unless you're really climbing and putting a lot of effort into getting good at the game, which, you know, a lot of us don't have time to do. I think that's where things like the aesthetic and the culture around that game and who you're playing with and what the community's like, that's where the competitive aspect, which is the ranking and, you know, the playing the games and being rated and winning or losing, interfaces with like the game design. And it's which of those wins that is going to dictate whether you have like an enjoyable experience long term, I think. So taking it back to like Lucio Ball has like the same ranking system that like core Overwatch does, but because the community is nicer and because the aesthetic is sillier, it's like a much less frustrating experience. And you see your rank go down a bit and you don't really care because you're just having fun playing Lucio Ball. By contrast, in the core game mode, I mean, I now really can't really play the core game mode because, you know, the people get angry all the time and I get like angry with myself, and, you know, it seems to kind of take itself maybe a little bit too seriously, and it all kind of adds up. So I think maybe that's where the balance happens that ultimately might decide, you know, whether you keep playing the game.
One thing I was going to say is several times now you mentioned communities and things like that, is how much does a toxic community affect your enjoyment of a game, like a competitive multiplayer game? Say Overwatch, where you're playing and there's people constantly berating you for not doing as well as you should, even though, you know, it could not be you that's the problem. How does that affect your enjoyment of the game?
So, I mean, I'm quite like a shy, meek person, I guess. And to have like, you know, someone on your team going, oh, you know, we're losing because of Carl, it's his fault, you know, he's a wanker. Like that, to be honest, that does upset me to an extent. And I know in Overwatch, like something I've been doing recently, just so I can carry on playing the game and like, you know, not have to worry about that kind of experience, because it doesn't happen like that often, but you're always worried. You know, you see someone getting frustrated and you're like, oh god, are they gonna blame me? Or you see them blaming someone else, and then, you know, you feel bad anyway because it's just like a negative experience. I think, yeah, so I've turned off voice chat and I don't engage with that at all, and I've turned off the like chat from the other team, so that because what a lot of people do in Overwatch is, you know, you get a little bit of an advantage over the other team, and then you go on, you know, the global chat and you start like taunting them or whatever, just, you know, to try and throw them off a little bit, so that, you know, that's it, you know, now they're playing worse because they're angry or annoyed or whatever. And again, that's like to me, that's like poor sportsmanship, and that's like kind of adds a lot of negativity to the game. I'm not saying it like offends me or whatever, but like having people spamming, "Oh, you guys suck," or whatever, I think it can affect your enjoyment of the game. So I try and limit how much I see that, but in a sense, it's a shame. And I think there are like other games where you can have more positive interactions with people that actually add value to your experience, rather than having to hide those interactions in case they detract value from your experience.
But I think it's good though that Overwatch offers that as an option for anyone to play, because at least it allows someone to play without having to think of those things. They can just focus on playing, on enjoying the game. They don't have to.
Yeah.
They don't have to engage with that sort of toxic side of things. And I think a lot of other games can do better to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, toxic community can really detract from the enjoyment of the game because, like you guys have said, we don't have a lot of time to play games. So the last thing you want is for some childish person to be berating you or other people over a game. I mean, it's supposed to be fun, and that at best is annoying. At worst, it's just disheartening. You just don't feel like playing anymore. So it's good that there is the option to completely get rid of that. And it's why I prefer playing games like that with people from the forum or people that I know. It means that I can still engage with them, and I know that they're very unlikely to turn into annoying children.
I was just going to say, it's good answers all round to the question I asked, because, I agree completely that it does affect your enjoyment of the game, and as Dragon said, playing with people from G Arcade is a lot more enjoyable because you can communicate and have a laugh while you're mowing down your enemy.
And in fact, that's got me to play games that I wouldn't otherwise really play. I literally only bought Player Unknown's Battlegrounds because so many people from the forum were mentioning it. And while that may not really be you wouldn't really be able to jump into a team with random people as easily as Overwatch, but it's a good example of how playing with people who are enjoyable can make the game enjoyable, even if you may not play it otherwise. The forum got me into Killing Floor anyway, so yeah.
I'd say like when we were playing PUBG the other day, we were playing with a person who is on the forum but doesn't really post there. One of us walked into a room, he was down, and one of us shot him. And instead of him bitching and moaning for an hour about how we're the worst people in the world, he just had a laugh about it. You know, that doesn't happen with random people. You know, a good sense of community when you're playing a game, it can really like highlight how much fun it is to play multiplayer games.
Yeah, I mean, I've also started to like optimize which multiplayer games I purchase based on some of these factors that we've been discussing. So recently I've kind of left Street Fighter behind, similar reasons to how Chris described it. But I have been picking up another fighting game called BlazBlue, and we had a discussion very briefly on the forum about BlazBlue and kind of sexist character designs. But that aside, I mean, it has this kind of like silly, over-the-top aesthetic, which makes it a little bit harder to take seriously, which is one of the points we've mentioned. And it's also has this kind of like quite small community, which is like quite close-knit. And they seem to just be happy to have like, new people playing, So it never feels like that. It never feels like an esportsy community where everyone's like playing to win or taking the game like very seriously, but mostly it's the aesthetic and just the characters doing like ridiculous things, and it constantly reminds you that you're just playing a video game for fun rather than really like getting tense over whether you're gonna get like the KO on someone. And I think that just makes it like a more enjoyable experience for Street Fighter for me personally. I guess as someone that's like not willing to spend hundreds of hours becoming like the best Street Fighter player, I guess just the slightly sillier games are just like more appropriate multiplayer experiences. I played I don't know if you guys have heard of Skullgirls.
Yeah.
I really, for me, I think like that's the most fun I've had in a fighting game. Again, because of like, you know, the silly over the top aesthetic, the characters doing ridiculous things, it having like a slightly smaller community but wasn't like taking itself so seriously.
It's good when you come across a community that is all about having fun and not taking itself too seriously. You don't come across it often, so when you do, you should cherish it.
I think that's one of the reasons why I like Splatoon, in that the lack of voice chat means that there's really no chance for it to devolve into another Overwatch where you're forced to mute everyone. Yeah, I mean, it's really that. If I'm going to play with people from the forum, we've got other ways of communicating, but even something like that, when I'm playing rank mode and I can see myself picking up ranks, dropping ranks, it's still enjoyable because no one is getting noticeably frustrated or just raging. And the good thing is the rounds are only a few minutes long, so you don't feel like you're wasting ages doing nothing.
Have Nintendo accidentally made the best multiplayer service by making a bad one?
It made it too bad because the limitations around partying up are kept it.
Oh, well, so it's still really, really bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But I think, like, no voice chat by default is, like, a really sensible move for a game like Splatoon. It's I don't think being able to yell at your teammates would add anything to the Splatoon experience. And I like that the only things you can say in the like in-game communication wheel are like really positive. It's just like, you know, the three options I think are like booyah, this way, and ouch, and that's like all you can say to other players.
Pretty much all you need, because you're ouched when you're shot, you're booyah when you do something fun, and this way when you want your team to move somewhere specific. I used that quite a bit today when I was playing Rainmaker, because I wanted to say, look, there's a path here, let's go. And it worked, we won.
Nice.
So it's been really interesting to hear that, you know, we all kind of have similar thoughts about you know, what makes these experiences fun. And I know this is a bit of like a leap in topic, but Chris, I know you had a kind of maybe slightly negative emotional experience in a game recently, and I was wondering if you wanted to tell us about that.
Yeah, so I've dived back into Civilization VI for the first time since it really sort of that first couple of weeks where it came out last year. There was some kind of big patch in the past couple of weeks. Not actually sure what it really added, but just popped up in like the Steam news sort of pop up, and I thought, okay, yeah, I'll dive back into that because I've not played in a while, and I've not beaten the game at I think level 5, I think, what, King or something. I'm not particularly great at these Civilization games, but I just thought, yeah, I'll play it. And I just found myself really getting bummed out at what I was doing in that game as a civilization, as a leader, and find myself like, I'm not liking the sort of the country that I've become, sort of the empire that I've become, and like what I'm doing to all these other countries in the name of apparently winning, being the best civilization. It's like, gosh, am I the best civilization? And I think it's because of the way sort of the world has changed, or the world news has sort of changed, I certainly believe, for the worse since the time that I first started playing Civilization VI last year. What I did, I started off as Spain, and I quickly found that I was not going to win the science victory, because I realized I was too far behind other ones. Other civilizations. I thought, well, I'm just dead last in this. I've never beaten the game at this level because I'm not particularly good at it. I'm dead last in it. What can I do? And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go for the military option. I'm going to go for, I'm going to build that big military. I'm going to take over everyone's capital. I'm going to win the game that way. And first I started with my nearest neighbours. And it was more because they annoyed me that they had settled a city literally one turn before I was going to settle in that same place. I thought, hey, you know what? I'm taking these guys over. And took them over, wiped them out. And I thought, okay, yeah, it's great. And then I suddenly realised that actually, I'm in an area that's really good for science, and there's other cities here. So I took over those other cities and took over their science sort of abilities. So that I was suddenly making a lot more science and then suddenly crushing everyone else in science. I thought, oh, I can do my science victory again. But then I was like, well, actually, I've got two viable options of victory now. I can either try and dominate them or go for science. So why not try both? And I started trying both, and all the other civilizations just started hating me because I'm this warmonger. And that's one of the things that they really added to the civilization, is the way people see you in terms of how you declare war and how often you declare war, or in what circumstances you declare war. And very quickly, in basically every game of this version of civilization I've played, everyone hates me when I declare war, and I just become this pariah, basically. And in this game, I was this pariah, but I was also just crushing the science. I was the best sort of city in terms of science, that after a certain number of turns, when I realized should quite easily catch everyone up and win this science picture I was originally going for, I realized that actually I've kind of stolen it from these other civilizations. The actual, if I look at the cities I founded, the science output from there is really very minimal. It's all because these other Greek cities, these Brazilian cities, they just go, like, they're science, they're the science capitals of the world. And I'm using that to win. And I was suddenly thinking, I've just kind of stolen it from these other players. What struck me most, I think, is I didn't have a religion, because in this game, you start off with after earning a certain number of faith points, you can start a religion. And I was dead last in actually starting religion, so I didn't have a religion to start. So I wasn't able to build faith areas, basically, in this game as well. There's these districts and faith, there's a faith district you can add. And what I found is that, I took over a city and been master of it for 800 years. And there were these smoldering shrines, literally on fire for 800 years, that I wasn't able to actually repair, because I didn't have the technology to build a shrine yet, because I had advanced in all other areas. So basically, I'd taken over the city and made the citizens watch that their shrine be on fire for 800 years to remind them who was in charge, and they have to give me their science output. And, I am this enormous dictator that turned into I went down the communist route I think it was just the easiest one to go down. And also, like I said, this game really sort of highlights your circumstances you're in. There's certain ways to boost your tech tree and your civics tree. So it really highlights that the reason that you've chosen certain things is because you're playing in a certain way. So I played in a certain way that made communism the form of government down the line that I went for. So I came to this communist country that had a massive military that was taking over, like, city after city, civilization after civilization, desecrating them, taking all their science output, taking all their production output, and again and again, I was destroying these shrines and making them ruins for hundreds of years. And it just made me realize I'm not liking winning this way. I'd rather be third or something, because and be a bit more peaceful than just sort of crushing everyone, being hated, and becoming just a war bastard.
So what you're saying is then is you didn't like the person you were being in the game then. It was like, I'm this massive ass, I shouldn't be doing it like this. I should be,
yes,
try to be a bit more peaceful then.
But the problem is it's not like, say, a first-person shooter or basically a game with like a set narrative where you're playing as a character written by someone else to say, this character is doing this. it's such a blank slate that it's me who's putting the orders in. It's me deciding to go down these routes, and it may be sort of like just have this moment of self-reflection of I'm choosing to do this rather than I'm doing this because the narrative suggests I'm doing this, which can make it more sort of interesting in terms of the stories that you're telling yourself. But it's when that story goes down the kind of darker route of you're taking over the world, you're making people miserable, that it suddenly just sort of it becomes a slightly less fun way of doing it. And actually the point that it became really kind of gross is that I was making a ton of money. I was making like 200 gold per turn, and it turns out that's just enough to start buying cultural artifacts. So like in the game, you've got pieces, like historic pieces of work, like say I think you've got like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne as something that you can put in a cultural icon, because you can win by having more tourists than everyone else. I started just buying all the cultural icons of the civilization that had any chance of beating me to pursue a cultural victory, just because I could. And it was like, I'm just hoarding everything, hoarding every kind of way of winning this game. And just like, I'm sort of just sucking up all the sort of good parts of this world into my own civilization. And it just like, it wasn't under some kind of like grand flag of like peace or anything. I was still a pretty horrible military sort of dictator almost. And I was just like, yeah, you know, I can hoard all of this and grow my empire. And just, I could have obviously quit at any point, but I just thought, well, I've not beaten at this level. And it was that point where I was just thinking, like, I want to beat it at this level. That was driving me towards doing it in any way possible. And the only way I found myself able to do it is by being a really just nasty, soulless kind of civilization that took from all others but didn't actually give anything back.
I tell you what, it's actually interesting listening to you talk about Civ in that way, because the thought of someone having a sort of emotional response from a game that isn't story driven, where you get these feelings because it's been put there specifically to do it. You just wouldn't expect it from a strategy game to resonate with someone where they can feel bad about what they're doing. I wouldn't say it's unusual, but it's for me, it's unexpected then.
I mean, Civilization does create this kind of world where it's a world which looks a lot like our world, that has political systems that look somewhat at least like our political systems. And I think because it looks like the Earth, or maybe you're playing as Britain, and it kind of looks like Britain and its politics, and you have like geopolitics and neighbors and countries, because it's all framed in that kind of language and with those kind of concepts. If you're playing to win and you're like doing evil things and kind of exploiting other nations, I think you can start to almost feel like you're role playing, I don't know, a fascist or a Nazi or something.
Yeah. Kind of looking in on yourself and thinking, am I really this kind of person? Am I really this bad? Would I do this in this kind of situation if it was real life?
Exactly.
Do you ever feel like that, yeah?
Is winning this game worth being a fascist?
Yeah. It's something that actually sort of brought to mind, obviously, in the past few months, politically worldwide, where sort of horrible things are happening. But it's stuff that, in previous, say, Civilization games, fascism was something that you could choose to do, but it's not something that made anyone, or certainly didn't make me feel uncomfortable, because it was such a historic suggestion. Sort of, that was something from 70 years ago. That's something that certain countries went down and did horrible things under that sort of flag of doing things that way. But it's a historic thing. It comes, you know, it's acceptable in this game because it's a historic game, and it's a game that's actually sort of going back on some terms of like seriousness and sort of silliness. It's quite a silly game. You know, you can do things like I can be ancient Egypt, I can play as Cleopatra, and I can meet Teddy Roosevelt. And Teddy Roosevelt can actually build the pyramids, and I can't. You know, it's that kind of sort of mixed up kind of historical kind of things where using that historical government's systems is basically fine, because it's all in this mixed up thing of like, here's the history of the world in a kind of a weird way. Whereas if you actually choose it now, you realize like actually that history of the world is still going on. And it's just something that, say, growing up, I think I certainly and have had less cause to actually see if it was still going on almost. So it kind of, it stops it being this interesting historic take on sort of how human civilizations rise and fall. And it becomes this thing of actually you are living history now. And that's where it sort of, it made me pause to reflect. And especially in this certain way I played this certain game as Spain, it made me pause to reflect that actually, you know, it's something that isn't just a mix up of things. History is stuff that happened in certain ways, and that's stuff I need to sort of understand a bit better than say, oh, I already do, just because it's something that possibly shouldn't be sort of enjoyed on its own as just this silly thing without really 100% understanding exactly the context that thing is telling.
Otherwise, do you feel you risk trivializing things like communism and fascism?
Yes, I think that's sort of the way, that's sort of the thing I've been sort of trying to get at, but been talking for 5 minutes trying to skirt around. But yeah, it's that kind of thing. It sort of, there's a risk of trivializing it. And I think that's what this game, sort of playing this way, made me realize that actually this is something that shouldn't necessarily be trivialized without offering the opportunity to understand it in better context.
And I think it's interesting that civilization has, I think, always allowed you to create worlds which you look at and you think, oh, that's a horrible place to live. That's a that world is awful. I know Civ 4 had like a slavery system where you could take some of your population and kill them, you know, trade them in for production. You're working on a world wonder and you take some of your people as slaves and then you work them to death to get that wonder built more quickly. So there have always been kind of dark mechanics in civilization. There's that classic story about the guy's Civ 2 game that went on for a decade in
the Forever War.
Yeah. Just this horrible nuclear wasteland where the last remaining pockets of civilization are just dedicated to building more nuclear weapons so they can nuke the other people, and then they get nuked, and it's just this horrible, you know, nuclear standoff just forever that can't possibly end. It's just this nuclear stalemate. You know, life has, you know, disappeared from this planet, and it's, you know, a nuclear wasteland and all of this. And that kind of, you know, I think it is interesting to play a game like Civ, which, you know, acts as like a cartoonish but still like a reflection of our world, and think about like the choices you have to make as a player, as a kind of, you know, one of like the gods or like political leaders of this world, right? To guide this world down a path that actually, you know, makes life for the Echoes people in that world really, really miserable. And yeah, I think it can serve as like a point of like, you know, self-reflection, or you can feel like bad about, you know, wiping out these people's religion, or, you know, wiping a city off the map with nuclear weapons. I mean, a classic strategy is to get nuclear weapons before everyone else and then just, you know, wipe a few cities off the map to make, you know, the end game a little easier for you. And, you know, some of these actions you can take are really evil in these games.
Yeah, and I think there's obviously, I think for most people is I think basically everyone is of the mindset that they can separate it out. That it's just a, oh, I'm just doing this. It's just a game. Obviously, if I was like this in real life, that would be really bad. But I know I'm not going to be like this in real life. So I think there's, you know, there's a lot to be said that it is sort of just a game. But is it something that I think if say the world hadn't gone the way it has gone in the last year, it'd be probably something that I wouldn't necessarily be feeling to the same degree. So I think it's probably because of things like that. And Pete, I remember you said a little while back that it's, you find it interesting that someone can come to a strategy game like this. But I think that kind of, the way, sort of say, good strategy games can have systems that can tell different stories depending on how things go, like Carl in saying that Civ 2 game that went a certain way and it became a really interesting look on how sort of geopolitics can turn out. I think that's the best thing about strategy games, why I like sort of some of the better ones a little bit more than others, where you can sort of like shape things in different ways because of different circumstances, but it's not written down as this is how it's going to play out. It's, oh, it's because of these systems in the background are making it this way, and because of this, it becomes this, because of this, it becomes this.
Yeah, I think for me, I've not really thought of it from the perspective of this is me, this is what I'm deciding to do, which it is. It flat out is. It's like I am being the asshole who's trying to take over the world. I've never thought of it like that, but you put into a perspective where I'm like, yeah, he's right. I'm obviously evil.
Of course, more scripted single-player experiences can induce this kind of feeling in you as well by kind of, you know, giving you choices but then lead to like negative consequences or just like subverting your expectations. Like a classic example of that is Spec Ops The Line, which... you starts off, you almost lulls you into a kind of false sense of security. You're just like playing the game. It's just like, oh, it's just like Call of Duty or whatever. But then the game like turns it around on you and kind of shows you some of the sort of collateral damage, you know, as you might call it, of what you've been doing, and tries to like illustrate, I guess, like the horrors of war to you. And I think it's valuable to have that kind of experience in gaming where, you know, occasionally a mirror is held up to the player and, you know, the player has to think about, you know, what they've been doing and, you know, just reflect a little bit on the actions. And, you know, not that you can't have fun doing, you know, really awful things in video games. That's, you know, it's fine. You know, it's just, you know, it's not reality. But, you know, it can be good to occasionally think about game mechanics and, you know, what they say about kind of, you know, you as a player or our culture, that, you know, it's, you know, you're kind of allowed to do that kind of thing in games. Cool, thank you for that. And there's just one more thing I think on our agenda. Pete and Shankar, you'd like to talk about the G-Arcade multiplayer nights. So now's your chance. Go ahead.
Well, I thought it would be a good episode to bring it up as we've been talking about multiplayer aspects through this episode. So I was thinking that I should bring up the Mario Kart Mondays night we have, which happens at 9 p.m. UK time. There's a thread on the forum, Mario Kart Mondays Wii U, where a group of us get together and play the Wii U version of Mario Kart 8. We also have the same for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on Tuesdays for the Switch. There's a thread for that with the tournament code in there, so anyone can join. On Wednesdays, we do play Splatoon 2 on the Switch. Again, just come into the thread, say you're interested, and we'll send you an invite, or you can just join on us, however it works, because I can't remember what it's like on the app.
We'll be playing, and pop into the thread so we know to look out for you, add some of our friend codes, and just join on us from the menu in the game. You don't even need the app if you don't have it, so don't worry about that. And with all of these, with Mario Kart, Splatoon, and everything else we'll talk about, we have Mumble, which we're using now, but we also have Discord. So also ask about details for those if you have a mic and would like to talk to us while we play.
Yeah. That is a good point, actually, with Discord and Mumble, because playing those games with chatting is it just heightens the experience totally and completely, if you ask me. We also, on Thursday, this is Carl's baby, is Arms Thursday. On Thursday, people get together, and Arms Day, and they get together and they repeatedly punch each other.
So then after that, we play some video games.
So pop, there's a thread for that. Pop in again, add some friend codes. You know, the more the merrier. You know, we want the community to grow with the stuff we're doing, and I think getting together and playing games on a gaming forum is probably the best idea to do. Also, these games are streamed, so if you're unable to take part and you want to watch them, see what we are like as a group, if you go to twitch.tv/grkadeuk, you can watch them. There's also Retro Monday then, if you want to watch that as well, which is me playing a retro game for an hour every Monday. Also, we have Shankar, who will jump in different days and play Splatoon 2 and various other games, as well as other members of the podcast and the forum who do things on Twitch as well. We also have a YouTube channel, which all the streams go to. So if you want to check out GRKade video on YouTube, you can check some of our past streams to see if you'd like to take part. Hopefully those listening will want to take part, because, like I said, the more the merrier. And I always have fun playing with people from the forum, as the Shankar.
Yep, definitely. And sometimes we play video games as well.
Great. Well, I look forward to hopefully seeing, you know, our many, many, many listeners joining us on the game nights. They're a lot of fun. I can't always be there, but I've really enjoyed the Mario Kart that I played. I've really enjoyed playing Splatoon with people, and I kind of run Farms Days. I haven't been very good at it, but I'm going to try and get it back on track soon. You know, some very high level arms play. We take arms very seriously. Come and join us, you know, if you think you're a high skill enough arms player.
One thing I'd like to add quickly before you sign us out is, if you are interested in other games that we haven't mentioned and you'd like a couple of people to play with them, just post in make a thread and ask, and there'll be plenty of people who will like to join you, play those games.
Yeah, absolutely. There are tons of us around, and you know, if you play any niche games, you know, we all play like weird stuff. Like I play Blaze Blue, and you know, I'd be up for that, and you know, there are people out there playing Street Fighter and stuff like that. So definitely you know, make a thread or just ask. I think the regular games nights are one of the best things about GRKade at the moment, so hopefully we can support them, and they'll grow and have lots of people playing all the time. That's the goal for any gaming forum, I think. With that, I think we're just about ready to wrap this edition of the GRKade podcast. Just right before the end, I would like to say that we had some new music, and that was Someone Else's Memories by Revolution Void. And that gets my legal obligations out of the way. So great, that's it. If you have any feedback, please leave it in the thread. We always like to hear from people. Even at 7, you know, your comments are even welcome. That's it for me. Thank you very much for listening. See you in a fortnight for the next episode of the GRK podcast. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for listening.
You know, one of my friends, he always like spells GRKade G-Arcade, like the word arcade. Because he doesn't post, and like he only ever hears me talk about it like verbally. It's like, oh, you know, and he's just like, I think it's like quite a confusing name to like explain to people. Maybe it wasn't like such a good choice from the our founding fathers, but
it makes sense because it was from Games Radar. But it's funny, Lydia, who we talked about earlier, she doesn't call it GRKade, she calls it Gurkade.
Gurkade.
She does, she calls it Gurkade.
We're like very angry people, so it kind of fits.